We'll call a meeting to order. This is State Government Finance Committee for Tuesday, March 20th, 2012. We have a quorum, and would someone move the minutes from our meeting of the 13th?
I'll move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leidiger moves those minutes. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor of approving those minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. We've got two bills with Representative Detmer. Welcome, Representative Detmer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good morning.
I will move House File 2426 that it be recommended to pass and sent to Ways and Means. Representative Detmer, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And House File 2426 is appropriation of Peace Office Memorial that we have right on campus here at the Capitol. It's appropriation for the fiscal year 2013 for the general fund to the Department of Administration to make needed repairs in the Peace Office of Memorial at the Capitol grounds. And I'd like to just turn it over to my two guests here that are going to be testifying. And we haven't decided who's going to go first.
I will.
Mr. Reed?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ed Reed. I serve on the board of directors of the Law Enforcement Memorial Association. And I'm here this morning to speak to you briefly about the repairs that are needed to keep the monument intact. As you can see from the handout that I just gave you, this is a pretty clear case of repairs that need to be made, or we're going to be in a catastrophic situation. 4 years ago or so, the state hired a structural engineer to look at the metal infrastructure that literally holds up the four marble sides of that monument. The structural engineer at that point said that, yes, they are degraded, and they're degraded to the point that he's going to give them about 3 years of life, and that was 4 years ago. So we have a potentially precarious situation here. If it would help, I brought some pictures that you could start passing around. We have been pursuing, we, the Law Enforcement Memorial Association, have been pursuing this with the state since the initial investigation by the structural engineer. And unfortunately, the State Department that's responsible for maintaining the monument does not have any funds to do so. So here we are. I'm prepared to respond to any questions you may have. I have brought with me this morning Captain Kevin Turgeson from the Olmsted County Sheriff's Department, who would like to share with you a few words regarding the monument and what it means to the community and the law enforcement community.
Thank you, Ed. As Ed
please,
mentioned, I'm Kevin Torgerson.
For the record.
Kevin Torgerson with the Olmsted County Sheriff's Office, and I'm the commander of the Lima Honor Guard, which is tasked to perform and represent all officers when an officer is killed in line of duty. And I can't tell you enough, there's just not enough words to describe how much this memorial means to law enforcement officers and their families, survivors, which Ed is one of those people, that we dedicate ourselves to preserving their officers' memories. And this memorial is a solid piece that really brings that forward to them. On May 15th, every year, we hold Peace Officers Memorial Day. It's a national event dedicated by President Kennedy. And on that day, the 14th and the 15th, we provide all kinds of services. And to see the survivors, their families, their grandchildren of officers killed many, many years ago, come to the memorial. And it's just incredibly touching, as you can certainly understand. And to see the memorial fall into some kind of destruction by Mother Nature in this case would be just a tragic situation. So anything that you can do to help us would be a great support to the law enforcement officers and their families and survivors.
Questions for Representative Detmer or the testifiers? If not, Representative Detmer, any further comments?
Just one comment. I know Mr. Reed probably didn't make this comment, but I know his son, Ed Jr. Reed, you know, gave his life in line of duty, and I commend him for coming forward and promoting this program for our peace officers in Minnesota. Thank you.
Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? Seeing that no one else wishes to be heard, I will renew the motion that House File 2426 be recommended to pass and sent to be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative. And thank you, Mr. Reed and Captain Torgerson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll move now to House File 1821. And this will need to be considered an informational hearing because technically this bill is not currently in our possession. So we're going to have to get it from the floor and then lay it over from today. So you may proceed, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I guess this is probably the third or fourth committee that we've gone through with this bill, and also 1821. Just speaking about the bill kind of gives me goosebumps because we're getting to a point where we might get it to the governor for signature. It's a bipartisan bill. We've done a lot of work with the language on the bill over the last several weeks. We have met with MnDOT and went line by line going through the language of the bill, and we feel we've got something here that we can take to the governor and that he will sign. As we know, we have many, many, actually 3,000 veterans now that are serving overseas from Minnesota. There's approximately 100,000 that are going to be through the reduction program at the federal level, coming back to the states, many of them, you know, serving on active duty, of course, and we'll be looking to continue with their education, also coming in to start jobs, start getting their jobs, and also hopefully companies. And this is a bill that would promote our veterans, small veterans businesses, and working with MnDOT to give them a preference. And when it comes to bidding for only state-funded projects, veterans will not be eligible for any federal-funded projects. So if there's $1 in any of our state projects, the veterans are not eligible to, businesses owned by veterans, they are not eligible to bid on those projects. I have a testifier here, and Mr. Jerry Kaiser, who has testified in a lot of veterans' bills over the several years.
Welcome, Mr. Kaiser. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council and also with the military action group called MAG. The United Veterans Legislative Council represents 34 of the major and minor veterans organizations in the state of Minnesota, and we wholeheartedly support this particular bill in that it facilitates the business of getting veterans back into the fold again. The MnDOT and us have worked together for years on this. Veterans are a minority, 0.8% of the population, and we have every minority that there is in the country, women, ethnic groups. This gives us an opportunity to get this 20% of these veteran, of these MnDOT contracts, which makes it easier for us then to get veteran-owned businesses who hire veterans back into the state of Minnesota working. It's imperative that we do this in order to give these men and women the opportunity to at least get back into the fold. There's many different ways to do it, but this is one step to do it. I might say that 80% of the MnDOT contracts are federal, 20% are state only, and these are the ones that are getting the preference on this. The state of Minnesota has goals for the disadvantaged business enterprises, DBEs, for the federal project, but there is none for the for veterans, and this gives us a leg up so we can at least bid on these projects. It's not that you're getting them, or it's a set aside just to help them bid on it. I'll take any questions if anybody has them.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Representative Detmer. When we were in transportation, we talked about targeted business groups, and your language on line 2.12 says the commissioner must award. And that was the bone of contention then, and it's the bone of contention now, whereas other business groups, it says the commissioner may. And my concern, and I'm just going to air this, representative, my concern is that somehow we're not really leveling the playing field. You say they're not eligible to bid on federal programs. Well, they're eligible to bid. They just don't have a designated status. Isn't that correct?
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. I don't believe there's been any veterans businesses that have gotten any contracts in the federal level.
But reality is they could still bid on them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to say they're not eligible is kind of a misnomer. It's just that they don't have a special status. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I understand what you're trying to do with your bill, and I think we need to put veterans to work, and I think we need to put everybody to work. I'm just concerned that when it comes to state funds, we are now saying veterans are one up over minority businesses, whether they be people of color or women, because the preference in the MnDOT bill says the commissioner may, but when it comes to veterans, it says the commissioner must. So could you just address that to the committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative. I met with Representative Champion. I know he was on the Transportation Committee, I believe. He came into my office. We spent about 30 minutes discussing this, and he could come forward with his bill, just like I'm doing. And as a state representative, we can come forward with our bills the way we feel that we represent our constituents the best. And he can do the same thing with his bill. There's nothing stopping him. And I would encourage him to take the same steps that maybe I'm doing. And as Mr. Kaiser pointed out, and in my experience, my 25 years in the military, we have people from all walks of life in the military, and just a small percentage of our population will ever wear that uniform. And to say that we're giving them a leg up, I don't know. I feel that they have done some sacrificing that most of us in this room have never done, and to bring them back to the state of Minnesota saying, hey, start a business here and we'll support you, and this is a preference that we would like to provide for you.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Detmer, I think what you're doing is noble. That's not my issue. What I'm asking you is to acknowledge that there is a difference between must and may. And we're saying must to veterans and may to communities of color or women.
20%. Representative Detmer?
Well, yes, there's a difference between must and may. I agree with you there. And I feel that going with the word must for this, for my legislation is the way I think we should go.
Well, Representative Gauthier.
Representative Detmer, I'm okay with that, and okay with you doing that. And you are right. We could go back and we could change it for must to may. But there's some history to that language also when it comes to targeted business groups and why it is may. So it isn't really as simple as we can just go do it. I mean, we've worked very hard with MnDOT to come up with language that is more inclusive. And I'm not going to belabor this any more than that, because you're right, we can do that. But I do want to acknowledge that there is a difference.
Yeah.
And I'm okay if this committee or if the legislature says we're going to give that leg up to veterans. I'm okay with that. But I want everybody to know there are some consequences to those decisions, and some of them unintended, that may be detrimental to minority people.
Yeah. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Detmer, I was just looking over your bill, and I see in Article 2, Section 1, Subdivision 3, it says veteran-owned small businesses having their principal place of business in Minnesota, which I think is important language to your bill. I don't see that language in other parts of your bill, especially under Article 1, and I'm just wondering if you could explain that or clarify whether or not this specifies in all areas through your bill that it be required that it be a Minnesota business.
Could you repeat where that's located again? Article. Just
the language,
Mr. Chair,
on
a line number
5.18 through 5.19.
Representative Detmer.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, the way it's worded is sitting down with MnDOT, going through line by line. This is what we came up with. That's my answer to that.
Representative,
Mr. Chair and Representative, let me clarify my question, I guess. I want to make sure that the whole bill specifies that it applies to Minnesota businesses and that we wouldn't be giving preference to veteran-owned businesses with their principal place of business in Wisconsin. And under Section 1 of your bill, there's no language requiring that it be a Minnesota business. And I'm just wondering how that would apply then to the rest of the bill.
Representative Moline, I think Mr. Shepard maybe has some information.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, I think that is the case, that this would only be awarded to Minnesota-based businesses. And I'm going to have to double-check with some folks in the audience. There's a really lengthy series of cross-references to different definitions, but one of the sections that is not reproduced in Representative Detmer's bill that relates to MnDOT defines a veteran-owned small business by reference to the state, the General Department of Administration purchasing program for veterans. And that program defines a small business as one with the principal place of business in Minnesota. So I think your concern is addressed, but I'm not positive because it's a little bit complex, and I may need to follow up and make sure that that is correct, but I think it is.
Okay.
We'll have an opportunity to have him report back to us because we'll have to come back to this bill in another meeting.
Okay.
Coming here.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Shepard. That clarifies, and I just have one other thing.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. When I look to do a bill this session that would give a leg up for all Minnesota-owned businesses in public works spending, so, you know, when we pass a bonding bill that all Minnesota businesses would have a 6% tie bid preference. And what I discovered through doing the research for that bill is that there are other states that actually penalize states that have tie bid preferences. And I can't say offhand if there are any surrounding states to Minnesota, but for example, if Minnesota had a 6% tie bid preference and Iowa had a law that penalized states that have that, then if a Minnesota company went into Iowa and put in a bid, they'd automatically have 6 points deducted from their bid. And I'm just wondering if you've looked into that at all to see if that would be the case in this scenario.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm not sure if our law transfers down to Iowa or any other state. If I think it just this law just applies to Minnesota, would be my answer to that.
Representative Moline.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, I wasn't saying that the law would transfer to Iowa, but there are other states that have laws in place that penalize states that have these tie bid preferences. So if a Minnesota company goes in and bids in another state, they would be penalized. I just wanted to make you aware of that. That's why I didn't introduce my bill that gave a tie bid preference for Minnesota companies and bonding projects. So it might be something that you want to look into.
Representative Michael Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is more a comment than a question in response to some of the things that have been said previously. When I look at the veterans that we have in our community, and we have Grand Rapids has just recently been designated as a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon community. We've had a lot of emphasis on this and a lot of conversation about the veterans. And certainly it's an area that's of interest to me and should be to all of us. These are people who have willingly gone out to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And they have provided a service to me personally because I am a citizen of this country and to this country. And we all know that we have many people in this state who have had multiple deployments. This is a major disruption to these people and to their families. And while others in the community are at home, advancing in their careers, improving their annual income, these people are off someplace doing something that I can't even imagine on our behalf, for me, for my grandchildren. And to say that we're giving something in special preference to them, I would disagree with that. I think what we're doing is starting them more on a level playing field by saying that we're going to give them a must instead of a may. I think we owe it to them. And, you know, maybe I'm a bit emotional about this, but I don't apologize for that. I think we need to give them the assistance that they need to help to compensate for the time they've been gone and the losses that they have suffered so that they can come back when they're finally finished with their service to the country and resume normal life. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, exactly.
I do have a story to share with the committee. And that story takes place in 2003 when I was located in Kuwait just prior to our troops going into Iraq. And I'm sitting at my workstation. I work nights. I'm sitting at my workstation. We provided intel for Central Command. And a young troop comes in, just came into my section that I was in charge of. And he's a specialist, an E4, not making a big salary, but he left a civilian job. He left a civilian job making nearly $100,000 working for a contractor, construction contractor. And I sat, when a new person came into my section, I would sit down with him and introduce myself and talk to them and, you know, where they're from and so forth. And he was just shaking his head. His wife at home had to start selling things off. Because now he's making, maybe $31,000. And so we talk about some of our soldiers that are especially reserve component, National Guard soldiers that are getting deployed. They're leaving, many of them are leaving good jobs and now making, an income that puts their families and businesses at risk. So I think of those types of stories, and there's a lot of them like that. And so I feel that it's my duty to bring a bill like this before the legislature.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Veterans today, they're coming back from Kuwait and Afghanistan, are not getting jobs. There was a time that veterans, when they came back from the war as a National Guardsman, they were guaranteed their job back. That's not the case today. Even Governor Dayton made a special provision for veterans in his new jobs bill, which I applauded. I think veterans are not unlike African Americans. They have a very dismal job placement rate. There's a lot of them out of work. But these are people that did something for us that we asked them to do. It's something special. And I agree with Governor Dayton. I think they need something very special. And they need help.
Representative Kahn?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I have a question on in the bill. What is the definition of veteran? What is this, the meaning given in 197.447? What is the definition of veteran?
Representative Kahn, you're asking the question?
I'm asking the question of the committee, because I have a particular point to make about the bill, but I need to know what definition we're using for veteran.
Mr. Shepherd, can you help us in that?
Mr. Chair, while I was looking that up, a veteran is someone who has, they have to have so many days of active duty. I believe it's 189, 190 days of active duty, and has to show on their DD-214 official record and served overseas on active duty.
Okay, well, let me...
Representative Kahn.
The specific thrust of my question is, I think all of us, we've all referred to the problems that the people with the multiple deployments are having. But as I was coming in, unfortunately, a little late, listening on public radio to the story of Sherman Adelson, whom I believe is a veteran, is a person who's contributed $26 million to the Newt Gingrich campaign. And what I want to know is if he were to open a small business in Minnesota, if he would be eligible for this. I'm sure he meets all of the definitions of it. And my point is, I think when we're looking for sympathy and we're looking for the need for this bill, what we're doing is specifically pointing to the people that we've seen with the multiple deployments. Because of the absence of the draft, are a very small number of society. But what I'm saying is that the class of veterans, and that's why I asked for the specific definition in the bill, could be very much bigger than that. It could include World War II veterans, Korean War veterans. It could include people who are extremely prosperous because they've built up their businesses. And I just want to make sure that we're clearly targeting the people we're all thinking about when we're thinking about the need for this bill.
Representative Detmer, did you wish to respond?
Well, you know, I guess we would welcome people to move to Minnesota, you know, and start businesses here in Minnesota, but I would be probably more prone to say that's what your situation, Representative, is probably not a normal situation for a veteran who has been serving.
I do remember...
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, sorry. I do remember there were cases of people applying for veterans preference with an extremely successful established business who had been veterans, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. That's not the people you've referenced when you talked about the need for this bill. And so I really want to make sure that what we're doing is we're talking, and although I agree with some of the things about I see the point of making them equal with other disadvantaged groups, putting them above other disadvantaged groups, and just saying, well, just put in a bill to take care of those is ridiculous. We have this bill here. We should have it equally apply to everyone. But I specifically want to know if this bill covers people who may be incredibly successful businessmen who were veterans very much in the past and got huge advantages. GI Bill, free education, very good things for housing, so forth, things that we should be ashamed that we're not giving to our veterans today.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I don't know, I don't hear that story for our veterans coming back today. But to answer your question, I suppose if there's a veteran that's been very successful, maybe served in the Korean War or the Second World War, that might be now more apt to hire veterans, to younger veterans, to be part of their company. Hopefully, maybe being able to put in bids for state contracts. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
hiring,
that's not part of the bill. I mean, if you want hiring veterans and helping newly returned veterans as part of the bill, that gets the bid preference, that should be put into it. But I think as long as we're talking about this bid preference for the people that we all completely agree need some extra help, you know, just reading the tragic stories of this sergeant who went out and murdered the civilians in Afghanistan, you know, you really understand the help that someone like that needs and hasn't gotten. I don't know if this is the kind of help they need, but the problem is to just uniformly say that all veterans, including an older person with a really established building business, should be given competition over a young minority or a young woman. Remember, in those wars, we didn't have a lot of women veterans because women were really pretty well excluded from the military, or certainly excluded from advancement in the military. And so I just think, I think that what the bill clearly needs is we need to limit veterans to the people that we're talking about. And if you had talked about those other veterans in the presentation of your bill, then maybe it might make more sense. But we're putting these young people in the current conflict, and I don't know when you want to start it, when you want to start it with Iraq or whatever, but I think we clearly need that limitation in the bill, or else it's very subject to abuse.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it's important on the heels of some of those comments to take a step back and just look a little more realistically at what the bill does. First of all, the definition of a small business is in statute, and these are veteran-owned small businesses, not veteran-owned corporate mega entities. And the commissioner has the ability under 16C to define the rules that designate what is a small business, and I think we're only just in this legislation including veterans in that category. And I would, when we talk about the must, first of all, in current law today it says shall, and I know we're trying to move to must instead of shall throughout statute as we go, and so I don't know if there's a huge difference in those two terms. And I would also draw people's attention again to current state law that says that small businesses should receive, actually says shall, for each fiscal year, ensure that small businesses receive at least 25% of the value of state contracts. And so Representative Detmer's provision here, that up to 6, not a mandatory 6, not a mandatory 2%, not a mandatory 1%, but up to 6% must be designated to veteran-owned small businesses, is by no means some radical departure from state law. In fact, it's just a very small carve-out of the 25% target. And even then, in his bill, when you read the language, it also just says that it can't be less than the percentage of bid preference given to other small targeted business entities. So again, to Representative McElfatrick's point that we're just trying to level the playing field, I think that's what he's doing. It also says they have to be on a proportional basis with other contracts, and the commissioner can establish a procedure to grant a waiver from this subcontracting requirement in those cases where it just doesn't make sense. And they're even using more of a carrot than a mandate when they talk about financial incentives for prime contractors being put in place for those who exceed these goals. So I think the characterization of A, that this is somehow unfairly giving an advantage to veteran-owned businesses isn't true. I think it's really balanced, really proportional, and this sense that we're granting some kind of unbelievable favor to veteran businesses without any controls is not accurate. And the last thing I'll say is something I've said every time this bill has come before the committee, having done contracts on the other side with state and local governments with a SBE, MBE, whatever it is, requirement, I'm telling you, it is really tough to find credible subcontractors, especially in technical spheres, to even come close to honoring the bid requirements for whatever it might be, 5%, 15%. It's really hard to find those technical skill sets out there. So I think not only is this the right thing to do for veterans, not only has Representative Dettmer structured this, I think, in a fair and reasonable way, but this is really going to allow our contracting community, I think, a better opportunity to honor the spirit of this small business set-aside. And I really thank you for your hard work on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple comments. I think a lot, I take to heart a lot of what Representative Downey said, particularly in light of his own experience, that this is an easy thing to do. I support the bill. I'm going to vote for it. I'm actually glad it's laid over because I do think that some further targeting and refinement might be a good idea. Representative Downey, you said that it says shall now. I'm not seeing that on page 1.12, on line 1.12, 1.15, 1.20. Maybe I'm just not looking in the right place. I think current law, as I'm looking at it, says may right now, not shall. And maybe there's another section that you had in mind. But in any event, I do think targeting, and Representative Kahn raises a good point, but others in this debate over the years have raised the point that maybe all the categories could use some tightening, and that maybe they're too broad as to any category. And so I think that'd be an interesting issue to revisit in another hearing. And I would just say this, that this is a good example to me, this bill, of where sometimes, you know, the pure free market may not produce the outcomes that we want. And I certainly don't mean to pick on you, Representative Stensby, but you remember during the debate on your bill in the last committee, it was in, I think, civil law, which I was on. I know it's several provisions. There was an argument about, well, government should step out of the way, and one of the rationales for your bill, and I'm really not picking on you, it's just that it's a recent memory, was that we should have a free and unfettered market, and that's why the trash haulers deserve, you know, a reverse condemnation. I think this is a great argument, members, for that sometimes there's market failure, and sometimes the market doesn't produce the results we want. And so this is an example, and I'm a strong proponent of this bill. This is an example where sometimes government has to step in and smooth out the rough edges of the free market system. So I support it on that basis, and I think it's a good lesson as to why all this talk about free, untrammeled markets, we just don't do that here. Most of what we do day in and day out is we do pick winners and losers. So when people say we shouldn't do that, our tax code is full of nothing but us making decisions about winners and losers, at the state and federal level, by the way. And same with our non-tax statutes. And this is one example. We are picking winners. I agree with you, and I'm going to vote for the bill. I just want us to be conscious when we're doing it so that on another bill we don't turn around and plead the free market.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reference to what...
Excuse me, Representative Downey, did you want to respond to the question?
Could I just real briefly... I looked up section 161.321 in statute, which is where this new subdivision is added, and that is actually referring regularly that section of statute to 16C.16. And so this may provision that we're talking about changing to a must exists under the umbrella of 16C.16, and that's where it says that the commissioner shall for each fiscal year ensure that small businesses receive at least 25%. So there's a must provision, if you will, already in statute for a 25% overriding set aside. And then within that, we've got some provisions that, you know, carve that up a little bit. And so that was the point that I was trying to make, is that there already is a must in there. So this isn't a huge radical departure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Representative Anderson.
That's okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I was going to reference back to what Representative Kahn had asked about the question, which is actually under Article 2, authorizing counties for bid preference for veteran-owned small businesses, defining the veteran. I was going to ask Mr. Shepard if he had found the definition in 197.447.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson and members, yes, the definition of veteran in 197.447 is similar to what Representative Detmer cited earlier. It's, in general, a person who is separated under honorable conditions from any branch of the armed forces after serving on active duty for 181 consecutive days.
181, okay.
Okay.
Representative Anderson?
Well, and to that situation, because when Representative Moline had asked about the principal place of business for the veteran being in Minnesota, Mr. Shepard referenced the fact that this somewhat leads back into Article Number 1, and I'm just wondering if this is the same case here, that as we're reading veteran and as referenced by Representative Downey, 16C.16, is that also referenced back to Article 1 in the same case?
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes. The Article 2 provisions relating to the county program define a veteran's small business by reference to Chapter 16C, so I think the same rules would apply where the small business would have to have its principal place of business in Minnesota.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. And so I think the veteran's small business, and getting back to the situation with Representative Kahn was concerned about as someone with a multi-big business being able to be consider for this, the small business definition is already in statute, and so that would be given the leeway of the commissioner to go ahead and say, no, I'm not going to give this veteran who's got a mega, multi-mega business the preference because he doesn't fit the definition of a small business. So I think that this has been, I would think, narrowly defined from what I can read from what the discussion has been. So appreciate
Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn's, I just, in trying to narrow it down to limit benefits seemingly to people who are already overly advantaged in some way, just being mindful of the fact that I have a father-in-law that's a World War II veteran. The average age, I just looked him up for the World War II is 89. They're dying at 875 a day. The average age of a Korean War veteran is 79, of which there's less than a million. It's in the process for Vietnam, but even Vietnam veterans are approaching 65 as an average age. I'm not really sure that we have to worry about somebody taking advantage of a system, giving their advanced ages, but that I'm not discriminating against their ability to do so. But I don't think that we have to really worry about a huge number of these people applying for these kinds of things. So I think we can safely narrow it down to who we're talking about here.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say my intention is to come in with the next time the bill comes up, is to come in with a definition that specifically limits it to the reasonable conflicts, to the recent conflict, which is what we're talking about. I think someone who has a business who's over 60 and so forth, whether that business is successful or not, does not depend on whether they were a veteran and served for the country. And I don't know, my father-in-law is 106 and still goes to work every day, and he's old enough to be a World War II veteran. So there are plenty. And the point is, the issue of the business itself, you can have multi-million dollar people who own or invest in a specific small business. It doesn't. I'm sure that that some of the complexes that some of these multimillionaires own include what would fit the definition of a small business in Minnesota. So I really think what we're talking about is the people who we read stories about every day, who have really suffered inordinately in the terms of the current conflict. Maybe we should put a resolution in here ending it, the current conflict. But aside from that, those are the people we're talking about, and we should specifically target them in this bill.
Representative Leidiger, and then we need to move on. And again, I want to remind everyone that this bill will have to come back to us for us to take official action. We will not repeat testimony but we will have the bill back before us to take official action. Representative Leidinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sometimes I think we miss the point. I had to go look for a quote that I remember from George Washington, and he says, "The willingness with which our young people are likely to serve in any war, no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive veterans of earlier wars were treated and appreciated by our nation." Mm-hmm. Now, what that means is we have to show appreciation to our veterans, and it doesn't make any difference whether they're World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, whatever. We're showing appreciation to those people who have served. That's what this bill is all about, as well as giving them preference. Now that's the one point. The second point is this. It is a melting pot. The military is a melting pot. They go above and beyond the call of duty in order to recruit and bring in a cross-section of American society to serve. So it's already... It already has a great proportion of females and people of color. So when you're giving them preference, you're already giving that good cross section of people the preference. And these are the people that have gone out with their life on the line for our country. And I want to tie that back into my first point. We must show appreciation. If we want young people to go into the service, to sign up, put their life on the line, and serve, we must show them that we appreciate veterans. That's what this is all about. That's all I got to say.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? Seeing that no one else wishes to be heard, we will have this back on the agenda tomorrow to take final action tomorrow. Thank you, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And
committee.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Next, we're going to move to the House File 1607, Representative Woodard. Members, the House File 2212 has been removed from the agenda. It's on the sheet that was in your packet, but it has been removed. It's not on the agenda. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 16, well, I'd like to move House File 1607, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Is that right, Mr. Marvel?
I will make that motion that House File 1607 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1607.
We'd love to have you on the committee, but since you're not official, we have to do it officially here.
I apologize for that, Mr. Chair. This is, I think, my fifth committee on this bill, so I was probably in a little bit of a rush. Sorry about that. House File 1607 was actually the result of Governor Dayton putting together a task force on Capitol security immediately following the unfortunate incident with Congressman Giffords. And the result of that is lots of stakeholders on Capitol Complex Security came together, and we realized they're doing a lot of good things, but there was no organizational structure for them to be able to come together on a regular basis and talk about what was happening at the Capitol from a security standpoint. So we also then recognized that we have no real organization in place if there was a threat to a member of the legislature or a member of the judiciary or a member of the constitutional officers. So we wanted to make sure that we had in statute the ability for us to have a way for the State Patrol to provide security if those situations did occur. So, Mr. Chair and members, what House File 1607 does is creates a task force that sunsets in 2022 that includes two senators, two members of the House of Representatives, the Lieutenant Governor, and a member of that the Chief Justice would choose. They will come together and also not only look at the day-to-day security of the Capitol, but provide recommendations on an annual basis on ways in which they believe the Capitol could become much more secure. And as part of the process of going through committees, we were able to address some privacy concerns about their access to non-public data. And we were also able to make sure that other members, including the Historical Society, also had a say
and what goes on in these committees. So that's the result of the bill that you see before you.
Questions from the committee? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Woodard, the fiscal note says must it be that the Department of Public Safety admin is going to absorb the costs on this thing? Is that my understanding from what I see $4 on here, but or is that $4,000? I'm not sure which.
That'd be $4,000, Mr. Representative Anderson. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, yeah, that would be $4,000. As you read through the fiscal notes, my understanding, and maybe Mr. Shepard can enlighten us if I'm incorrect about this, a lot of where the fiscal note comes from is the belief that the senators and the representatives might ask for per diem as a result of coming for these meetings. Not that the State Patrol would have any additional costs, but they would absorb those costs under their regular duties. So I don't know, if Mr. Shepard, if that's an accurate enough description or whether any clarity is needed there.
Ms. Roberts, do you want to speak to that?
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct. You'll see on page 4 and 5 of the fiscal note is the section dealing with the legislature, and there's discussion of the possibility of members asking for reimbursement. So there's an estimated cost of $4,000, but it also notes that the legislature would absorb those costs.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Woodard, Representative Woodard, is there some type of committee being formed now? I mean, without having actually the formal language in law right now, is there anything going on between the governor and admin and public safety regarding this issue?
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, today it kind of operates in a silo. There is communication that occurs between the sergeant at arms, the judiciary, and admin and the State Patrol, but it is very much operating in a silo today. So the purpose here was to consolidate that information and be able to say, let's have an entire policy for the Capitol complex, especially when you start talking about what happens in the State Supreme Court. That seems to have different policies and procedures than we have throughout the rest of the Capitol. There's also a concern that we ensure that the Capitol remains open to the people of Minnesota. And I think that was made clear throughout these meetings that is one of the primary concerns, is that we don't limit access to the Capitol. And especially with if the Capitol were to be restored, as I hope it will be, this committee could be a part of that process too, to ensure that, you know, some of the things that ensure security without impeding people's access to the building, those recommendations are made.
Any further questions? Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Woodard, I haven't had a chance to read this over too thoroughly, but is it required that the threat be related to the legislator elected official's job as a legislator elected official, or could a threat be made against one of us in our private lives or in our other jobs, and we would be guaranteed protection under that scenario?
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, the way the bill is written is that the governor would be advised by the Commissioner of Public Safety, that this group would come together, and the commissioner would advise the governor on the course of action to take. So we really leave it up to the governor and the commissioner to decide what would be a threat that would warrant State Patrol. My guess would be, and it really is a guess, that if it happened within the private life that you have, that it would not incorporate that there really would be specific to issues that you might encounter as in your job as a legislator. But we do leave it open for them to make that call.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Kahn.
Well, as someone with some experience in this, because I'm possibly the only person in this room who has had their life threatened while, I guess, I don't know if considered campaigning is on the job, but when it was someone who approached me with an axe saying very strong things about how I shouldn't be in the legislature and so forth, and when I attempted to make the complaint to the Minneapolis police, I managed to be right near a friend's house, so I was able to just duck into that person's house, but decision was that an axe is not an assaultive weapon. He just might have been out going to chop wood in his yard or something like that. So just letting you know what the limits are on getting any kind of protection. I didn't want protection. I just wanted something done to this guy. So.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, this bill would probably not help too much on that either, because it certainly is not the State Patrol's prerogative to take those complaints and actually move them through the criminal justice system. It would be if a sustained threat was made against you, and then they would take that into account. The State Patrol would be a part of that process.
Well, this guy had made verbal threats at other things, but it was only when he appeared with the axe that I got a little concerned.
That's understandable.
Any other questions from the committee? Anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? Seeing that no one wishes to be heard, if there are no further questions, I will renew the motion that House File 1607 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Who do we do next? Okay. Representative Erdahl is going to present the Representative Keel's bill, and that bill will need to be, if it's going to move from here, will need to move to Legacy Committee. So, Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, do you want me to move it, or do you want to move it yourself?
You can move it, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I will move that House File 2875 be recommended to pass and sent to the Legacy Committee. Representative Erdahl.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is basically a technical bill from the Department of Administration. It deals with redundancy in how the film board is viewed between the Department of Administration and tourism. Grants have to be approved twice, it also deals with some effective dates on grants. It has obviously the support of the Department of Administration because it's their bill, and it is not opposed by the film board. And have Ms. Haugen with me from the department.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Haugen. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives. For the record, my name is Alyssa Haugen, Director of the Office of Grants Management in the Department of Administration. This bill for us will just clarify for agencies the two statutes that they can reference for effective dates. This is not new language. It already exists in statutes, but our idea behind these two changes is to place them in the grants language, so when people are looking for those references, it's all in one place. And then again, with the film board changes, currently the way that it reads, after we received that grant last year, we would need to approve the grant expenditures and then seek approval from Minnesota Tourism. So this will remove that redundant effort on our behalf. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to address those at this time.
Any questions for Ms. Haugen or Representative Erdahl? Representative Leidiger.
Yep. Thank you very much. I'm a little bit confused. How is the grants processed? The film board processes those and sends it to you? Is that what happens?
Ms. Haugen?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the grant is set up so that we give a grant to the Minnesota Film and TV Board. They administer that grant program and then report back to us, and we need to approve their expenditures and make those payments. But the way that that statute currently reads, we would then, before making that approval and payment, also need to seek approval from Minnesota Tourism because they previously had oversight of this program. And when we received the appropriation last year as part of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, that change was not made, so that's why we're seeking it at this time. So there won't be two agencies approving expenditures.
Thank you. Representative Leidiger.
Quick follow-up. Before you are able to spend those grants, is there certain criteria that the organization must meet in terms of their governance? And I'm talking specifically about the film and TV board. Are they? Do you have certain regulations that apply to towards their governance? Do they have a rotating board? Are they an open administration or executive level? Is there a criteria?
Ms. Hogan?
Mr. Chair, representatives, the Film and TV Board is here that can address some of those specific questions directly. We have a grant agreement with them and list the stipulations of the grant program in that agreement. But if you'd like them to come up, I think they'd be happy to do so.
Representative Leidinger,
I would like to know how they're governed.
Okay. Would the person who can help address this question please come forward?
And as Ms. Winter is getting here, we have criteria within the bill as well on what is expected, maybe not in this particular bill, but we do in legacy funding have criteria for what we expect the grant to do.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. I'm Lucinda Winter, Executive Director of Minnesota Film and TV, the state's film commission. And to answer, I can answer the question. I'd be happy to, Chair Lanning and members. We are a public-private entity. We've been in business since 1983. We receive a state appropriation each year, which we have to match with private funds. I do have a board of directors that rotates. Currently, I have 20 board members. They are all volunteers from the community. They represent academics. They represent filmmakers, TV producers, commercial makers. I have a CPA on my board who serves as our treasurer. I also have three attorneys on our board of directors who volunteer their time and also provide us with pro bono legal work. We are audited every year privately, and those audits are, anyone is welcome to review our audits. And as far as the Snowbait program goes, which is the program that is being questioned here, it's a reimbursement of expenses that all expenses, once they're paid, have to be submitted to us. We look at every receipt over $25. We look at every payroll record. We are careful to throw anything out that does not apply under the rules of statute 116U. Everything has to be a Minnesota zip code. All payroll records have to be a Minnesota payroll company, and we check people's driver's license or other form of ID to make sure they're a Minnesotan. So we feel that the program is well administered. We are not kind when we're looking at reimbursement requests because I am a taxpayer, and I make sure that as to the best of my ability and my staff's ability, we are only paying on legitimately paid expenses that are outlined in 116U. Any reimbursement request that is over $1 million, which is beyond the capacity of my staff to handle because we only have four people in the office and we're looking at all these receipts, is handled by an outside auditor whom we have trained in the specifics of the film industry so that they know what to look for and they can understand what they're looking at. And that is an independent auditing company that we've worked with enough times that they understand how the business works.
Representative Leidinger.
Thank you. For the board members, is that 20-member board? Is that a fiduciary board?
Yes.
Ms. Winter.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yes, Chair and members, that is, they have fiduciary responsibilities, and of course we carry insurance on them the whole night. They are responsible for making sure that I am properly spending our budget, and we meet monthly. The board meets monthly.
One more question, please.
Representative Leidinger.
And how long of a term do they serve, and is it rotated?
Chair and
staggered, I mean.
Sure, Chair and members, yes. They're 3-year terms, and you can serve up to 3 consecutive terms, and then you have to roll off.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? House File 2875. Seeing that no one wishes to be heard, Representative Erdahl, any final comments?
No, thank you.
If not, I will renew the motion that House File 2875 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Legacy Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank
and
you.
Testifiers. The last bill for today is Representative Torkelson.
What is this? We are going.
Welcome, Representative Torkelson, and I will move House File 2458 be recommended to pass and be sent to Ways and Means. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2458 is an advisory inspection bill. The impetus for this really is to reflect a model that OSHA has been using for some time, whereas a business that might have a permit would request that the agency come in, do a walkthrough inspection. It's kind of an inspection where they would not be required to exert penalties, but would walk through the business with the business owner, point out things that could be permit violations, and give the business owner a chance to fix those up. This would be done at the request of the business owner, and the cost of these advisory inspections would be borne by the business owner. We have a number of amendments to this bill. I don't know if you want to get those on right away, Mr. Chair. That would be my preference.
If there are amendments that the author recommends, let's take care of those first.
All right. We'd start with the A3 amendment.
I will move the A3 amendment. Will you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really, it comes at the request of some of the agencies to kind of tie in this to their needs, and specifically eliminates the need for this bill to affect the Highway Patrol. Highway Patrol does truck inspections, but it does these truck inspections and when they pull a truck over on the road. The typical inspection is done not by the agency, but other folks. Private businessmen that do those inspections. So this advisory inspection bill does not really work very well for the Highway Patrol, and this would eliminate them from coverage in the bill.
Representative Torkelson, I see we have a typo here on line 1-8. Instead of impost, it is there such a word as impose?
I do not believe so, Mr. Chair.
Should be impose. So I will move that oral amendment. Is there such a word as impose?
It's like impounding the mail.
There's an imposter, but... All in favor of the oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. You're back on A3 amendment. Any questions? This is the author's requesting this to get the bill in the proper shape. Representative Anderson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, again, this was for the State Patrol for purposes of...
The last part of the amendment deals with the State Patrol and their inspection of trucks. I personally own an 18-wheeler, and when I get it licensed every year, I have to have it inspected, and it's inspected by a private businessman. But if I'm driving down the road and the State Patrol pulls me over, they can do an inspection on the side of the road. They can check the weight, they can check all the safety and other equipment on the truck. We would not want to make that an advisory inspection. If it was an advisory inspection, I'd call up the State Patrol and say, please come and inspect my truck. They don't have time and facilities to do that. They're there to make sure we're safe on the road. It's the private businessmen that do those regular annual inspections. So that's why we're trying to differentiate the Highway Patrol here. And I have a couple of other issues in the bill I'd like to speak to, unless Representative Anders has a follow-up.
Oh, that's it. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye. As amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. The A3 amendment, as amended, is adopted.
Thank you.
Your next amendment.
Thank you. We then move on to the A4 amendment.
I would move the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are really just technical corrections to the bill. We're really not trying to relieve people of violations, but we're trying to, you know, make this a process where they would do these advisory inspections. So I believe this language is all a technical fix.
Mr. Shepard, did you wish? Okay.
Mr. Shepard,
all in favor
might,
then?
If yeah, we need further explanation, I believe Mr. Shepard would be able to help us.
Yeah, he said that you've covered it.
All right.
All in favor of the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The A4 amendment is adopted.
Thank you. Then the A5, Mr. Chair.
Okay, do you want to explain? I'll move the A5 amendment. Do you want to explain it?
Again, I would request Mr. Shepard to make an explanation.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, and I hope Representative Torkelson could correct me if I've got this wrong, but if you look at page 1, line 18 of the bill, the type of penalties that this bill refers to under the current version of the bill include civil or administrative fines or other sanctions. They also include cease and desist orders and injunctive relief. And so under this amendment, it would delete the cease and desist order and injunctive relief from this bill. So you couldn't, if you were violating a law, you couldn't request an advisory opinion and continue to violate it for 60 days. The agency would be able to get a cease and desist order. And so this would make the bill apply only to civil or administrative or other financial sanctions.
All in favor of the A5 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The A5 amendment is adopted. Is that your...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have an oral amendment.
Okay.
This would be on page 2 of the bill. After line 2.14, we would add a new line. It'd be numbered 8, and it would read Workers' Compensation Division at Department of Labor and Industry. We've been informed by Dolly that if they were included under this bill, it would be a big drain on the workers' comp fund, and that was not the intention of the author. And so that is why I'm offering this oral amendment.
I will move that oral amendment. Any question? Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, could you repeat that again for us?
Yes. On page 2, after line 214, you would add 8. Workers' Compensation Division at, shouldn't it be at the Department of Labor and Industry?
Yes, I believe that would be correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shepard, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes. I will write this down okay. For Mr. Glessing as well, if that's helpful.
Okay. All in favor of that oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The oral amendment is adopted. And Representative Simon, you have an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I think you and I, through some others, communicated yesterday about this one, and I think we both agree on this, and the agency people do. A6 would tweak the language in lines 1.16, and when the dust settles, it would read this way. It would now read, upon the voluntary request of a person to a state agency for an advisory inspection for the purpose of complying with state or federal law, the agency must conduct an advisory inspection. That's the language that we had talked about yesterday. So that's it, members. And I seek the author's approval.
Representative Torkelson, that's an amendment acceptable to you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, with one change. I understand we need to strike the word federal on line 1.5 to get the amendment in the proper shape.
Mr. Chair, I'll incorporate that change.
Okay. Representative Simon incorporates the deletion of, is it or federal?
Or federal.
on line 1.5 of the A6 amendment, delete the words or federal. Representative Simon, that's correct?
Correct.
Any questions about the A6 amendment? If not, all in favor of the A6 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The A6 amendment is adopted. I think that's all the amendments that we have. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Speak to your bill now as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging us with this with these amendments, but it does put the bill in good shape to send it on to Ways and Means, and I would stand for further questions if there are any.
Questions from members. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill, House File 2458? Anyone who wishes to be heard? Yes, come forward, John. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is John Rakuski with the Department of Labor and Industry, and I'm speaking on behalf of the several agencies that are affected by this bill. And we also have in the audience representatives from the MPCA who testified last week in the policy committee about a program that is a voluntary program. I would, since this bill got its genesis from the concept of the OSHA consultation program, I thought I'd share with the members a little bit about how that works and how it compares and contrasts to what this bill intends to do, if I may take a minute, sir. Most of you, when you think of OSHA, you think of OSHA compliance, the folks who go in and find citations for workplace safety. In Minnesota, we're a state OSHA plan. About half the states, the feds have delegated the authority to the states. The other half of the states, in fact, in our sister state, Wisconsin, it's a federal program. So what we've been able to do here in Minnesota, since we're a state-run plan, we've been able to add that other program called OSHA compliance, or OSHA consultation, excuse me. It's a much smaller part of the department. I believe we only have about a dozen folks who work on it, but it's a really important program in that a business, as Representative Torkelson said, voluntarily signs up. I do want to point out that it isn't just a one-time walkthrough, as it might be characterized. It's a program where a company or a construction, especially the big construction projects, you know, the TCF Bank, the I-35 Bridge, and Target Field were all part of what are called the OSHA consultation or MnSTAR programs. Those companies decide at the beginning of a project, or they decide to bring in OSHA consultation, and they work with OSHA over a period of up to 3 years to attain a certain level of workplace safety standards. And it's a huge commitment of time and resources by these companies. The commissioner and I visited several of these companies over the interim. There are just a handful of companies that meet this standard. After about 3 years, if they met all these standards, workplace safety standards, OSHA gives them this recognition. It's called MnSTAR for companies that are, I believe, over 1,000 employees, and MnSHARP is for the smaller employees. The smaller employees that we visit, employers that we visited, coincidentally, all had a global imprint of a global company. They typically had different companies around the world, so in a way they were still really big corporations. So I just wanted to point that out. It's fewer than 0.1% of Minnesota businesses attain this program, so it's a pretty high standard. The language that Representative Simon and the committee just adopted narrows the scope of this so that current inspection processes that go on at the different agencies would continue to go on unfazed. And I believe that was the intention of the bill, and I'll stop there for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Rakowski? Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier or the author. And it was kind of hard for me to follow all the amendments, so maybe the language addresses that. But how would this apply to someone that, say, isn't paying prevailing wage laws. Would that affect this at all?
Mr. Rutkowski?
That's a very good question, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moline. The penalties that are imposed on a company not paying prevailing wage is extremely rare because our investigators have to prove when they're doing the payroll audit that it's willful and repeated violations. I believe we've only penalized just a few contractors since we've had the enforcement powers since 2008. And it gets a little confusing because of an employer when they misclassify a worker, and we issue a citation to that effect saying you need to pay this worker this amount of wages. And as you know, in some cases it can be several hundred thousand dollars. The employer thinks of it as a penalty, but it's not a penalty. It's a payment of wages that were otherwise owed to that worker. So I hope that answers it.
Representative Moline?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if the author could comment on his thoughts on that, too.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I direct your attention to page 2 of the bill, line 2.10, where it specifically eliminates violations that are part of a pattern that has recurred repeatedly and shows willful intent. And I believe, responding to the question regarding prevailing wage, that's exactly what prevailing wage situation would be. So I think we've covered that in the bill.
Good call.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? Seeing that no one wishes to be heard, any final comments, Representative Torkelson?
No, I just appreciate the support of the committee.
Okay, I will renew the motion that House File 2458 be recommended to pass and sent to Ways and Means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The bill moves forward. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Members, a couple of housekeeping things. We did send the letter with the results of our polling on the various capital investment projects. That went to the Capital Investment Committee, and that is posted online, the letter we sent, and it's in your packets. Tomorrow we've got the Banyan bill. We've got three different veterans-related bills, two of Representative Ward and Representative Conan. Then we're going to hear from Representative Kiffmeyer on the Sunset Commission bill, and we may very well have to carry that over into Thursday. We had thought maybe we could do it Wednesday night, but it doesn't look like that's going to be possible given our session schedule. And then we will also take up again the Detmer Bill 1821 to vote on that and take final action on that tomorrow. So with that, members, we're adjourned.